Okay, so let's just start. So Andrew asked me to give some introduction to quantum transport, thermoelectrics, and macroscopic heat engines. So I prepared a few slides. Here's a rough outline of the talk. So first I will introduce very generally what we mean when we speak about scopic transport. Then I will come to thermoelectrics and in particular explain why we are interested in multi-terminal thermoelectrics. Actually, yesterday or 2 days ago, we had an interesting discussion with Janine, what is multi-terminal? So for Rafa, Andrew, and me, it's always three and more terminals. For Janine, already two was multi-terminal. and then we go through some examples. So there will be quantum dots that can be interesting for energy harvesting, where you try to get as large power, current, and efficiency as possible. And we'll talk a bit about chiral thermoelectrics, where in the quantum Hall regime and electrons can just run around your sample in a chiral fashion, and we see how this influences thermoelectrics. And then I will also talk a bit about phase coherent heat transport, which initially might sound a bit contradictory in itself, because usually heat is something that you associate with dissipation and so on, and it destroys phase coherence. But there are actually systems where you can combine phase coherence and heat transport in a very nice way. So let's start with mesoscopic physics. Normally when you talk about nanoscale transport, you talk about comparing the size of your system to some absolute length scale. And when we talk about mesoscopic physics, it's more about comparing different physical length scales. If you have some more conductor, then there's, of course, the geometrical dimension of the system. Then since we have electrons in this conductor, there's a Fermi wavelength. And depending on how these two quantities compare to each other, we might be in a regime where actually size quantization becomes important. Then electrons will scatter elastically when they travel through the conductor. That defines some elastic scattering length. And this elastic scattering basically does not change the energy of the particles, but will release to some isotropic distribution in momentum space. And then there's, of course, also inelastic scattering that takes place usually on a different length scale, and which then leads to relaxation of electrons towards, for example, some Fermi distribution. And finally, very important, there's the phase coherence length over which the wave function of the electron loses its phase coherence. And so now if we want to talk about a mesoscopic conductor, we require that transport is phase coherent. So the geometric dimension of the system has to be smaller than the phase coherence length. And to give you some idea of how large or small this is, if you have some very clean two-dimensional electron gas and you're at very low temperatures of a few hundred millikelvin, then these phase coherence lengths can be of the order of several microns. So these systems can be fairly large. and one important consequence of this phase coherence is that you can actually not chop your system into several parts and treat each of them separately and then just glue everything together. So for example, if you have this some mesoscopic conductor, you can just draw this here. And you would chop it into pieces and calculate the conductance of each of these parts, then you could not just add them up and get the total conductance of your system. This defines what we mean by a mesoscopic conductor, and then transport can either be ballistic or diffusive, depending on whether your sample is larger or shorter than the elastic scattering length. And if the dimension of your system is smaller than the Fermi wavelength, then you have effects of size quantization coming in. And so here I've collected a few examples of mesoscopic conductors. So we have a quantum point contact up here, which is basically a narrow constriction that connects two large electronic reservoirs up here and down there. And now by applying a gate voltage to these gates here, you can actually control how wide this constriction is. And you can, for example, pinch it off completely, and then you can have a situation where there's just a single quantum channel that can be transmitted through this quantum point contact, and then you have a conductance of 2 e squared over h, and then you can subsequently open up more and more channels, and each channel gives this contribution of 2 e squared over h to the total conductance. Another example are quantum dots, which are shown here. So a quantum dot is basically a small region where electrons are confined in all three dimensions of space. And due to this confinement, there's actually size quantization coming into play, and you really have discrete energy levels in this quantum dot. And that, of course, makes them interesting for thermoelectric applications. Because there's this old paper by Mayen and Sofer which state that the best thermoelectrics should have very sharp features in the density of states. And if you have this delta-like resonances in the quantum dot, that's of course optimal. Quantum dots are also interesting because they have offer a large degree of tunability. So, for example, by applying some gate voltage, you can shift the energy levels in this quantum dot up and down in energy, which might be interesting if you think of some periodic heat engine. But you can also control the degree of coupling to the environment. So, I mean, here this quantum dot is coupled to a source and to a drain electrode, while these barriers here, and you can basically, by applying gate voltages again, go from a regime where the quantum dot is completely isolated and pinched off from the reservoirs, to a regime where you actually have weak coupling to the reservoir so that single electrons can tunnel on and off the quantum dot. But you can also go to the regime of very strong coupling, where you're going to have other interesting effects, for example, like the Kondo effect, which arises because there's a spin signal on the quantum dot that is screened by the electrons in the loop. And a last interesting property of quantum dots is that there are strong Coulomb interactions, so it's also interesting from many body physics perspective. And down here we have two other examples of mesoscopic conductors where actually this phase coherence is really important because these are interferometers. So we have this Aronoff-Bohm ring here, where basically the conductance of this ring is controlled by the magnetic flux that pierces the ring. And then here's a slightly more complicated interferometer, where you have actually electrons coming in here, hitting this quantum point contact, which acts like a beam splitter. And then electrons can go along the upper edge or along the lower edge and hit, again, this second quantum point contact or beam splitter, and from there they go to the drain 1 or to drain 2. Okay, so much about mesoscopic transport in general. So now let's come to the thermoelectric part. So the conventional thermoelectrics with two terminals is shown up here. So you have your favorite mesoscopic conductor, and you connect it to one reservoir on the left, another reservoir on the right. The reservoir for themselves are in local thermal equilibrium, so they are characterized by some voltage and some temperature. And now if you apply a temperature bias across your system, you will have, of course, heat flowing from the hot to the cold part of the system. But you can also get a finite charge current flowing. And as you can directly see in this picture, of course, heat and charge flow in parallel or anti-parallel because there's just one direction of traveling. And this changes if we go to three or more terminal thermoelectrics, which is depicted here. So we again have our mesoscopic conductor, which is coupled to two reservoirs on the left and on the right. But now, in contrast to this two-terminal case, these two reservoirs are actually kept at the same temperature. And it's the third terminal up here which is heated and which injects energy or heat into our system. And importantly, we want to restrict ourselves to systems where this heat source injects only heat but no charge into the mesoscopic conductor. And the idea is, and then you want, of course, to drive the charge current between the two code terminals, as is depicted here. And the motivation behind this is that you can achieve a sort of separation between the hot and the cold reservoir in this type of setup. And the separation is actually twofold. So on the one hand, you can really achieve spatial separation between the heat source and the cold reservoirs, which might be interesting if you think of applications and you don't want to have leakage heat currents from the hot to the cold part of your system, which would spoil the efficiency. But then on the other hand, we also have, say, an electrical separation between the heat source and the actual rectifier of this thermoelectrics. And that's a nice feature if you think of energy harvesting applications, because if you want to harvest, say, energy from a hot computer chip, you don't want to short circuit this computer chip at the same time. And finally, another interesting fact in these systems is that you have this crossed flow of heat and charge. And actually, I've looked at some quantum Hall systems where we really have a crossed flow in the sense that we consider four-terminal geometry and heat is flowing, say, from the top to the bottom through our setup, while the charge current is flowing perpendicularly from the left to the right. Okay, so now let's come to some examples. So the first type of setups that I want to discuss are based on quantum dots in various fashions. And so the first setup here was discussed by Rafa and Markus Whitaker, and they looked at quantum dots in the so-called Coulomb blockade regime, which means that these quantum dots can be occupied either by zero electrons or by one electron. And that means that if I have these double dots set up here, then in total I have a state space of four different states. So this dot can be empty or occupied with one electron, and this can also be occupied with one electron or be empty. And now these two quantum dots are coupled to three reservoirs. So the upper dot, so-called conductor dot, is coupled to the two cold reservoirs, while this gate quantum dot down here is coupled to a single hot reservoir. And so in this way, we have this three-terminal geometry. And now we, of course, need some coupling between these two quantum dots, because otherwise we would just have two isolated systems. And the coupling between these two dots is achieved via capacitive interactions. And so this means that actually the two dots can exchange energy via this capacitive coupling, but there's no way of exchanging particles between these two systems. And this way you have really achieved this electrical separation. Okay, and now in order to describe such a system, you just use a standard rate equation approach. And importantly, in this system, you don't have to take into account any coherent superpositions of the different states because they're all far away in energy from each other. And then physically, what happens is that you can actually drive a charge current between the two cold reservoirs via heating this third terminal. And a typical transport process is depicted here. So let's imagine we start with the double dot being totally empty. And then what happens is that an electron can tunnel, say, from the left into this upper quantum dot. And we end up in this state. Now, in the next step, we can have an electron tunneling from the hot reservoir into this lower quantum dot. And in order to do so, we actually need to pay the charging energy of the double dot. So we extract energy from the hot reservoir. Then in the third step, we start from this doubly occupied state, and now the electron from the upper quantum dot can tunnel out, say to the right. And this way we now release this charging energy into the cold reservoir. And finally, we also empty the lower quantum dot to go back to the initial empty state. And so that means that in one such cycle, we have transferred one quantum of energy, that's this charging energy from the hot to the cold part of our system. And at the same time, in the ideal case, when these tunnel barriers are chosen in an appropriate way, we have also transferred one electron, so one quantum of charge, say, from the left to the right-hand side of the system. And this has actually some important consequences. So if you analyze the efficiency of such a device, you find that you can reach Carnot efficiency, which tells you that this is obviously the best heat engine that you can come up with. And then you can also calculate the efficiency at maximum power, and you find that, at least in linear response, this is bounded by eta Carnot over 2, as it should. So in terms of efficiency, this is really a great device, but then if you think about how large are the actual currents that you can generate, or the power that such a device produces, it's really tiny. And so this was sort of our main motivation to go to other systems in order to increase this current and output power. And this then led us to different types of other setup. The first idea was to go away from this Coulomb locate quantum dots to so-called chaotic cavities, which you have P on the left-hand side. So these are now much larger quantum dots with many electrons in them. And they are coupled to the reservoirs, not by a tunnel barrier, but by quantum point contact with many open transport channels. And so the idea was, or the motivation was, that in this situation, you should be able to get much larger currents and then hopefully also much better thermoelectric device. And what we actually find is that indeed such a system can generate a much larger current. That's simply because we're no longer in the tunneling limit. What we also found is that the output power and the efficiency of such a system is actually small and not much larger or even smaller than in the Coulomb blockade regime. And the issue with this type of setup is that now you actually have these many transport channels in these quantum point contacts, but most of them are actually completely open. So just have unit transmission, there's no energy dependence, and that means that they do not contribute to the thermoelectric response of such a device. And it's just a single channel which is partially open, which gives the thermoelectrics, and then you actually find that the power scales with the inverse of the channel number here, and the efficiency is even suppressed by another power of n. But even though this device is probably not the best thermoelectrics, now having these two different regimes, on the one hand the Coulomb blockade physics, on the other the chaotic cavities. So if you now make a plot of, say, the output power, versus some typical conductance of your device, then in the Coulomb blockade regime, there's actually a linear dependence on power, of power on conductance. But then at some point, you go out of the Coulomb blockade regime. And on the other hand, if you are in this chaotic cavity regime, where for large conductance, then power scales as 1 over g. And so, I mean, if you have this type of behavior, then obviously, somewhere in between, there must be a maximum. And physical intuition will tell you that this maximum should occur when you have a single channel, so conductance of E squared over H or 2E squared over H. And so this was then our motivation to come to go to another quantum dot setup where we have resonant tunneling through the quantum dots. So this is now a variation of this three-terminal theme. We have this central cavity, which is heated by some source that is not specified. And then we have the left and the right quantum dots, and these couple the cavity to the cold drain and the cold source electrodes. And then what happens is that electrons can tunnel into the cavity from the left, absorb some energy, and then tunnel out to the right-hand side. And this way you drive a finite current. And what you actually find is, if you analyze this system in terms of scattering matrix theory, is that you get much larger power and current than in the other two systems. It's like two orders of magnitude bigger. And at the same time, the efficiency is also fairly promising. I mean, you get something like an efficiency at maximum power, which is 20% of the Carnot efficiency, which means that in terms of efficiency, you might lose a factor of 2 compared to the Coulomb blockade case, but then this is, of course, more than compensated by these two orders of magnitude that you gain in current and power. Okay, so much about the quantum dots. We then also looked at what we called chiral thermoelectrics. So this is based on the quantum Hall effect, which occurs when you put a two-dimensional electron gas in a very strong perpendicular magnetic field. And what happens then is that actually the bulk of the system becomes an insulator, and transport can only occur along the edge via these edge channels shown here in green that run around in a chiral fashion around the system. And the intuitive physical picture behind this is that in the magnetic field, you of course have cyclotron orbits of the electrons, and when you are somewhere in the middle of the sample and you do these cycles, you don't go anywhere. But when you are at the edge, you have these skipping orbits, and then you can run around. Okay, now in order to get some some interesting thermoelectric properties, you actually have to do something to this system. Because if you just take system like this, you would have a unit transmission of electrons from terminal 2 to terminal 3, from 3 to 1, and from 1 to 2. So there would be no energy dependence of the scattering matrix, and therefore there would be no thermoelectric response. So you have to introduce some additional scattering mechanism in the system, and this can be done, for example, by putting some gate voltages here that define a quantum point contact, and then you have this step-like transmission function. But you could also do something more complicated and define some quantum dots in these arms here, and then you would get some Lorentzian transmission like this. Okay, and then you can actually analyze such a system within scattering matrix theory and linear response. You can write down the charge current and the heat current, which are driven by a bias voltage applied between terminal 1 and terminal 2. Or by a temperature bias that you apply to the third terminal. And the connection between these driving forces and the currents is then just given by this Onsager matrix. And the interesting feature of this chiral thermoelectrics is that actually this coefficient LET, which is connected to the Seebeck coefficient, and this coefficient LHV, which is connected to the Peltier coefficient, can be different from each other. Why is this surprising? Well, if we did not have any magnetic field, then Onsager symmetry would tell us that these two coefficients have to be equal to each other. But now, since time reversal symmetry is broken by the magnetic field, they can actually be different. And it's just LET of magnetic field plus B that is connected to LHV of magnetic field minus B by Onsager symmetry. And the remarkable feature of this chiral setup is that actually the asymmetry between these two coefficients here can be maximal in the sense that one of them is finite while the other is exactly zero. So it can have a Seebeck effect but no Peltier effect, and then when you reverse the magnetic field, you get a finite Peltier effect and a vanishing Seebeck effect. And this might or might not be interesting, because there has been this prediction by Casati and Benenti that actually when you have this asymmetry of the Onsager matrix, then you might be able to get much higher efficiency at maximum power. But it turns out that then there was some subsequent work by the group of Udo Seifert, where they showed that actually current conservation in such a system imposes a much stronger constraint on the efficiency at maximum power than the second law of thermodynamics. And so if you have this three-terminal setup like we consider here, then actually in linear response, the efficiency at maximum power is again bounded by half the Carnot efficiency. Now, in the introduction, we already saw that these quantum Hall systems can also be interesting to build interferometers. And so this was our motivation to look at a heat engine that is based on one of these Mach-Zehnder interferometers. So basically, you now have a three-terminal setup, and then electrons can pass through the upper arm of the interferometer and into the drain, or go through this lower arm of the interferometer.
Can I ask?
Yes?
Why do you only restrict yourself to linear regime there? You could study these models also beyond, right, using scattering theory. I guess you guys did that or not?
In principle, we could go to a non-linear regime. There are, but I mean, here we just had to start somewhere, and so we did linear response, and I mean, there was already enough interesting stuff going on. Actually, now we're also looking at the nonlinear regime where we want to operate this whole thing as a refrigerator and then these nonlinear effects.
Because really then you could probably go beyond half of Carnot in the nonlinear regime.
Yes, probably.
And experimentally, there's no motivation for doing this in the linear regime. Or would you argue that experimentally these kinds of setup are close to the linear regimes?
Perhaps the larger the voltage, the more you have to take care of interaction effects.
Yes, that could be an issue, that interaction effects start to play a role.
But I don't know if this is bad. I mean, it's perhaps bad for doing the theoretical
case. You treat the whole thing as a non-interacting electron.
Yes.
Bjorn, I think for the resonant tunneling case, we looked at that beyond linear response, right? We have some general...
Yes, that was beyond linear response.
Yeah, so I think we do indeed find we can go above half Carnot efficiency at maximum power. I think you can even beat this Kurzion-Alborn bound, yes. Isn't that right?
Okay, back to the interferometer. So we have these two arms, and then electrons that pass along these arms will pick up a certain phase. And the phase difference between the two arms is governed by two effects. There's one contribution, which is due to a magnetic field that just pierces this area here. But then there's also another contribution, which arises from the path length difference between the upper and the lower arm. And this contribution from the path length difference gives rise to this term here. So E is the energy of the electrons above the Fermi energy, and tau is the difference in traveling time through the upper and the lower arm. And now the interesting feature of this type of heat engine is that the only energy dependence of the scattering matrix comes from this contribution to the phase here, which means that any thermoelectric response that you can observe in the system really is of quantum mechanical origin. So, I mean, it's coming from this interference in the Mach-Zehnder interferometer. So, I mean, this probably really deserves to be called a quantum heat engine. And then you can again do this Onsager analysis, and you find again that also in this type of system you get this extreme asymmetry. So it seems like that this is really some generic feature of these quantum Hall systems. Okay, now to the last part, this phase coherent heat transport. So there the idea is to look at a Jovison junction, which means we have two superconducting electrons that are connected by some normal metal or by some insulator, whatever, something non-superconducting. And, well, then we can have different temperatures of these two superconductors. In principle, you can also have different voltages. And there can be a phase difference between the order parameters on the left and on the right-hand side. And now for the system, you can calculate the charge current that was done by Jodison long time ago, and there are basically three different contributions. There's one part which is just due to the tunneling of quasi-particles in the system, and that requires that you apply a finite bias voltage in your system. Then there's this famous Joulson term, so supercurrent, which flows even in the absence of an applied bias voltage, and which depends on the sign of the phase difference. And finally, there's this last term, which arises from interference between quasi-particle transfer and Cooper pair transfer. And this also requires a finite bias voltage and depends on the cosine of the phase difference. So much for the charge transport. But then you can, of course, also calculate the heat current that flows through such a junction. And you can actually show that the structure of the heat current is very similar to the charge current. So there's again a contribution due to the quasi-particles above the superconducting gap. And this does not depend on the phase difference because the quasi-particles don't know anything about the phase of the Cooper pairs. In principle, there's also this second term due to the Cooper pairs, but I mean, as long as you don't apply bias voltage, all Cooper pairs in the superconductor are at zero energy, so there's no contribution to heat transport. But then there is this interference term, which goes as the cosine of the phase difference, and which is really this phase dependent or phase coherent heat transport that you can have in these Joulson junctions.
Then you don't need to worry about this difference in terms of the temperature.
Yes, that's then only driven by the temperature, and that's actually an important point because, I mean, if I apply a bias voltage, the phase actually becomes time-dependent. So, I mean, here this usually would just average out if I apply bias voltage. But here in this temperature-driven case, I don't apply bias voltage, so the phase is really fixed, and then I have some control over it. Because otherwise, I mean, this would oscillate at gigahertz frequencies, and you would not be able to see any thermal effects there. Okay, and now with these phase coherent heat transport, you can do some interesting stuff. I mean, you can actually use it as a probe for certain systems. So, I mean, we looked at, for example, so-called topological Joulson junctions, where instead of a normal metal in here, we have a two-dimensional topological insulator where transport occurs along these helical edge channels here and there. And recently there has been a lot of interest in these topological Joulson junctions because you can create so-called topological and drift bound states, which are kind of connected to Majorana fermions. And there has been a big discussion about how you can actually detect them in a good and proper way. And I mean, one way would be, for example, to detect some 4π periodic Joulson effect, but I mean, there are many issues from an experimental side, and so our idea was to actually look at this phase dependent thermal conductance of such a system, and then you can really find clear signatures of these topological and drift bound states. But even from a more applied point of view, these systems can be interesting. So, for example, if you pierce this by an additional magnetic flux, then you can actually operate this like a thermal switch. So if the flux is zero, this whole system has a very small thermal conductance due to the superconducting gap. But then as you increase the flux, you can basically close the gap in a controlled way and get a large thermal conductance. And currently we're also looking at quantum dot-based systems. So now we have these two superconductors coupled to a single-level quantum dot. And there you have this interplay of this thermal non-equilibrium physics, but then you also have superconducting proximity effect where you induce coherent superpositions of the empty and the doubly occupied quantum dot. And all of this is combined with Coulomb interactions. And maybe that's also interesting from this point of view that here you really have a system which you cannot describe by a standard rate equation, but here you really need to take into account these off-diagonal density matrix elements that describe these coherent superpositions, which arise due to the coupling to the superconducting electrodes. Okay, and that's all for the moment.
So did you also look at some thermal phase here?
What do you mean by thermal phase?
If you have the gradient and the thermoelectric effect in the superconducting junction, then this can induce changes in the phase difference if you have open boundaries.
Yes, but I mean, here we assume that these phases are fixed, and then we just look at the current that flows.
So what has been built?
There are actually a few experiments. This Coulomb blockade heat engine has been built by the group of Lawrence Mohrenkamp. And they basically see exactly this physics described by Raphael Marcus.
Also in the Gladwell group.
I was just about to say. because the Gladwell experiment is not in the Coulomb blockade regime. It's actually more realizing these chaotic cavities. So there's the Gladwell experiment. There's also the experiment by Lukas Rorschach in Würzburg. Which is more in this regime of a chaotic cavity. And this very last one with the resonant tunneling is currently being built or run in Cambridge in the group of Charles Smith. So it seems like these quantum dot setups really have caught the interest of the experimentalists. For the chiral systems, we are still waiting for somebody to go ahead.
I have a general comment on thermoelectric devices. They are heat engines, so they must have some oscillating element like a piston. So I'm trying for last few years to convince people that this is necessary, that the standard theory of the based on the kind of statical picture, so it means that there is no time dependence, cannot explain generation of work, because somehow we know from the general principle, to get work, we need time dependence. You cannot drive electric current in the closed circuit without some pumping mechanism. And for example, macroscopic devices, it's easy to find such a mechanism. Of the p-n junction, you have plasma oscillation, which can be can self-oscillate and then behave like a pump, which pumps electrons in this external circuit. So I think that there's also a chance for these devices to find this.
You have cross electron tunneling.
Yes, I mean,
but this electron tunneling, it's not the same. You need something, like in any machine, you need something which periodically change state of the...
I think I can make a comment on that. at least in the quantum dot, not this one, but the previous one. The closest thing that I see from the picture that you're describing is that you can show that there are cycles in state space. So in terms of you're moving from one state to the other in a cyclic way, and that this has the net effect. So from the system point of view, it's a cycle, but from the bus perspective, you've moved stuff from one place to the other.
Yes, so but this is incorrect picture. So it's completely equivalent to introducing a non-conservative force which produce work along the closed path. So this is physically impossible, but it can work from the mathematical point of view. And Jarzyński, with some co-workers, showed that this is completely equivalent to what they call stochastic pump. So when you average the effect of stochastic pump, which is physical in some sense, because if you combine this with a mechanism of self-oscillation, you get a nice clear picture of a heat engine. So this picture with the stochastic pump is completely equivalent to the picture of non-conservative force driving current. But this is mathematical equivalence. Physically, they are different because there are different effects. For example, you should observe the effect of oscillation by, you know, measuring some radiation.
Well, here, of course, you change continuously the charge on the dot, for example.
So
an oscillating plasmon, I mean, in this case, you have an electron that tunnels from one side to the other, and
you need some extra degree of freedom, some oscillator, like a plasm, which acts as a piston in the engine. So you cannot have any engine without the mechanism of self-oscillation. So it means that you have the source of energies of gradient of temperature or gradient of chemical potential, and this is transferred into oscillation or certain essentially semi-classical element. And this oscillator is the pump, which pumps current in the closed circuit. Otherwise, you violate the basic physical properties, I mean, Faraday law.
In this case, what he's saying is the tunneling rates in the quantum dot.
Well, so tunneling is... it's not an oscillating, coherent process. It's a steady state. You have some probability of tunneling from one side to another
side.
But
this changes on time.
And you need some time dependence, really some periodicity, which is a overall periodicity of the essentially not macroscopic but on semi-classical level, something which really drives this this flow.
But even classically, you can run machines. Think of an AC, but air conditioning. But you drive it instead of alternative current with the direct current. You can do that, and then you create a steady state where you're converting the electrical energy into the thermal energy, and it's a steady state process. So even macroscopically, you can build an engine that is running at steady state.
No, this is not steady state. This is there is an oscillating element. There is a degree of freedom which behaves like oscillator or rotates. You cannot do it in a steady state in the sense of a transport equation. You need
The experiments were done, so I mean...
I don't claim that, experiments are done, but there is much more physics in this system. If you really try to search for this oscillation, you can... It's the same mechanism in the solar cells. And there are experiments in organic solar cells that they show that there is an oscillating component of charge separation, what they call. Charge separation is exactly also the same, essentially the pumping of charges around the closed circle. And they really observed such oscillations, which are at the same frequency as some optical phonons on the interface. But they call it additional effect. Yes, that is something which helps in the case of photovoltaic devices, organic photovoltaic devices. This effect helps, to improve the but this is not additional effect, it's a fundamental effect which must be present in any heat engine.
But I think that what happens here is still something where you have a fluctuation due to the tunneling of the electrons. So you discharge and charge your quantum dot, right? And if you want, it's very similar to your...
No. Fluctuations and coherent oscillation are very different. So this is even the definition of the word, when you try to define word on the level of quantum mechanics, you need some time-dependent Hamiltonian or something which is equivalent of this. So this is what we need here also. We need an additional degree of freedom which oscillates.
So I wanted to make a comment. So in my view, the great advance of this kind of engine is precisely the fact there's no cycling involved at all. It's an autonomous engine, no cycling. So if you go to the next engine, So the fact that, you know, so in the usual way of doing an engine, you have to have these different strokes and so on. But it's very clear from this kind of geometry on the right, if I define my power, for example, as just the current times the voltage I apply across the device, I can calculate this within standard transport theory. I generate power just by heating the central cavity according to this mechanism that's drawn there. So there's no cycling. The only time dependence is just the dynamics of the tunneling. And so I would say that this is really the advance of this whole field, is that there is no cycling at all.
I disagree completely, and I think only experiment can solve this problem. So I think it should not be difficult to make experiment for the standard solar cell and observe terahertz of radiation emitted by this solar cell during operation.
Okay, so these experiments have been done. And so the question is, what would you be looking for in addition to the theory? So the theory that
the theory
that's described here explains the physics very well and quite completely. And so what additional feature would you be looking for evidence of this mechanism you're talking about?
I'm sorry, it doesn't explain physics because it's, you can find it. This is something what we learned in school, even, that whatever kind of mechanism you have here, you can heat, you can have a light source, you cannot drive current under stationary condition in the closed cycle, because the electromotive force is equal to minus, and this is magnetic flux. So to get a constant electromotive power, you need a constant increase of magnetic field through this system. And of course, you don't have a magnetic field. So the only way to go out from this is to introduce somewhere oscillating force and some kind of valves, one-way valves. So dungeon always provides things like that. And this can pump electron fluids through the circle. Under stationary condition is simply impossible.
So what you're saying
is take this proposal.
What would you see here?
Have this picture. You do not have the rest of this.
No, of course there's a circuit, right? And that's what you'd run the load against.
Yes,
right?
When you add the circuit, you get contradiction with the fundamental physics.
Okay, so all you're saying there is that if I run a current in a loop, I'll generate a magnetic field. Yes?
No, to run the current in the loop, you have an electromotive force, you need first to introduce increasing electromagnetic field to infinity. Yeah? So there is no other way to get electromotive force under stationary conditions.
Okay, so I return to my question. So in these experiments that were done, what feature would you look for in addition to what's been described that would give some...
There must be some oscillator here, some charge oscillations. And this charge oscillation would produce, for example, radiation. Or, if you have a very accurate experiment, you probably could see some oscillation in the current produced. This is what was essentially seen in photovoltaic devices, but organic photovoltaic devices. So this is the oscillating component in the photocurrent. So this was observed. And there was observed also another element. When you radiate the resonant radiation with the same frequency as this internal oscillator, you can produce a current without, for example, light or anything. So you can somehow, from outside, move this piston. So and this is observed in organic photovoltaic, but the interpretation is that it somehow plays some additional very nice effect, but not the fundamental one.
But, I mean, also in this case, it's not that from the outside they do the separation, right? I mean, they it's an effect that is internally produced, right? And what's done then is perhaps also a temperature gradient or radiation that.
Well, I'm saying that this is incomplete.
I mean, now in your example, I mean, do you think they do more than what they tell from the outside, or is there an internal cycle that's activated by?
No, there is some internal type of oscillation. So I know that in the macroscopic devices there are plasma oscillations. I think something analogous must be here also in this mesoscopic devices. Because when you have two materials, you always have, at the contact, you always have kind of plasma oscillations. And this is this missing part in the description of this devices as heat engines. You have to add this to produce really a pump, which pumps electron current in the closed circuit to avoid the contradiction with fundamental, say, Faraday law.
The objection that you make there, my feeling is that it's the standard thing of how building a non-conservative force, that there are no non-conservative force in nature, but you always have to see this as a limit of a conservative force in order to create these non-conservative forces.
I agree. There are no non-conservative force in the future. This is illusion. But one can show somehow mathematically that this non-conservative force comes from the self-oscillation mechanism. And this is something what has also physical consequences, because if something oscillates inside of this, it can be measured.
But why? You could also view it as emerging from, you know, it's a time scale issue, that if you have two big reservoirs, of course, over time they're going to equilibrate. But you can identify scales over which they're almost not changing. And if you assume that all those scales, they don't change, then you can treat things as a non-conservative force. But of course, over much longer scales, you this will be a transient system.
No, but this is engine, because also in this business, one mix up completely different type of devices, engines and batteries or capacitors. In capacitor, we do not have this problem, because we have charged capacitor, and then we do not have a closed circuit. So electron goes from the higher potential energy place and is discharged. To make it engine, you need to charge and recharge, and then you have to introduce again this kind of periodicity. And then this type of device, it is charging and recharging goes always. So, permanently, yes, and with a very high frequency, because this is the frequencies of the self-oscillation. So one should not mix up batteries or capacitors with engines.
Okay, so Bjorn, do you want to say anything further about this, or?
Well, I think it's going in the direction that Ottiliano mentioned, that here, when we describe all these systems, we always assume that the reservoirs are in thermal equilibrium, which, of course, is not true if you look long enough. I mean, then, if you have a bias voltage, electrons travel from one side to the other, and voltages equilibrate, but that's not in the description, because, I mean, that's happening on a completely different time scale than what we're interested in here.
It doesn't work on this. What you say, it happens here, that there is some flow in this direction, but to get electromotive force here has nothing to do with this reservoir is large or big or what is the time scale. You simply have to solve this paradox. You cannot have current in the closed circuit.
Isn't this in the battery limit in your?
they've got a large reservoir and they don't have to refill it.
Yes, but this exactly the okay.
Okay, so I have an idea. What I'm giving you as a homework assignment, think clearly your objection and present it to us in a more systematic way, because I'd like to understand more clearly what you're thinking about.
I wrote 5 papers or maybe more about this, but
okay,
I'm going to read it to us.
Okay, so maybe we can have you present it, or you can send us the papers, and we'll have a discussion.
Yes, it's a pleasure. This is my duty. You know, I'm a traveling salesman recently, so I travel over all places.
That's what we all
I
do.
Convinced some, I don't know, maybe 4 people, so that's not completely unsuccessful. And one guy who is the owner of the big solar cell company in Australia, he was also a scientist before. He wrote even an email that finally he understood how the solar cells work, because during his whole career he couldn't understand it, how it is possible to generate work. So that's but I know something which exists for 200 years. I mean, it's difficult to change the paradigm. I would be very pleased if you
So that's on the docket for later. You'll present something about it so we can understand what you're talking about. Okay. In the scheduling list, I'd also put tentatively Rafa and Janine could also have some time to present some of the background of this or some of their thoughts on this topic. So I'm opening up to you guys if you want to.
So actually, we didn't prepare any extra material because we thought that there were many things presented.
Yeah.
We prepared a list with things that we thought were open issues and
good,
things
very
to
good.
Be discussed.
Very good.
So I don't know, perhaps we can simply write these things on the board and we discuss them.
That sounds good. Do you want to take a break first, or
I think let's have a good time to have a break. Let's have a 10-minute break, and then we'll go back.